Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's episode is with Gret Glier. Gret is the CEO of DonorC. Gret has spent 3 years in Malawi. That's obviously a country in Africa, which a lot of you might not know. And in Africa, he was doing poverty alleviation work. This included building houses for orphans and widows, providing mosquito nets to malaria-infested areas, and crowdfunding a $100,000 girls' school in a rural village. Last September, he moved home to launch his startup, DonorC. DonorC is an app that helps donors see exactly where the money goes, where they donate using picture and video updates. Really, really excited to have you on the show. Welcome to the show, Gret.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ty. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure is mine. And it's funny, when we were just talking earlier about how people have described your app as, you know, the Uber for charity giving. Someone said Tinder for charity giving.
Yeah.
How would you describe what you do?
To me, when I look at the different like apps that are out there and the different companies that have existed, the one that I like to describe, the one that I visualize the most in terms of my aspirations would probably be YouTube. Actually, I really like YouTube has done something where they've like flipped the media industry on its head. Yeah. And they've dispersed power to just like normal everyday people. And then DonorC is pretty much the same thing. Like we're basically trying to take there's these really large organizations that are in general like very inefficient and often very wasteful and even maybe corrupt sometimes. And what DonorC does is it gets money directly to people on the ground who are doing like real work around the world.
So I want to put a pin on that. I want people to get an intro into who you are, because I think that's really, really, really interesting. I come from Nigeria, and a lot of times people always ask about where the money goes for certain things, and this is an app that definitely will help with that transparency. But if we go back in time to like little Gret, when Gret started, what was your childhood like, and how would you connect the dots to what you do right now?
Yeah, so I think the funny thing is what I would consider a very privileged childhood. I have, the son of two parents. I have very, very loving. They sent me to a very nice private school when I was in grade school. And then when I went to college, they paid for my college education. And we would always go on like these pretty big, like trips, like either safaris in Kenya, or we'd go to all-inclusive resorts in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, you know, that kind of thing. And so as I was growing up, I had a very nice life, but at the same time, I was going on these like vacations, like specifically that one in ninth grade where I was going to Kenya. I remember going from the airport to the resort and seeing people living in poverty all along the way, and realizing something is different about me, and something like there's like this massive disconnect. And so when I started realizing like my place in the world, like, oh wow, I grew up and I had all of this, I was given all of this stuff, and it was just handed to me. And meanwhile, there are people who are just born into villages in sub-Saharan Africa who never have had a sip of clean water in their entire lives. I was realizing that when I was realizing some of this dynamic, that's kind of like led me along the path to where I am today.
That's fascinating, and it's incredible the amount of self-awareness you had. And I think that's common with a lot of entrepreneurs that are creating, you know, problem solution apps or you know, any of those type of things that are actively solving a problem, is that idea of reaching that level of self-awareness and then connecting that with a global problem. And it sounds like you did the same thing.
Yeah, I think so. I'm very numbers oriented, and I think what was happening was I was putting together the numbers. I was like, okay, our vacation out to Kenya cost this much per night. You know, it's like we're talking like thousands of dollars per person on this like 2-week vacation. Meanwhile, there's people living on the other side of this resort wall who are living on $1 a day or $2 a day. And when I started like when some of that stuff started hitting me in the face, that was when I had to deal with it. I had to like really look at it. And I think most people would be like that. I think most people just haven't had the chance to like see extreme poverty face to face.
No, absolutely. It's funny. So being a Nigerian, we have this juxtaposition in my country where at the same time we're the fastest growing economy in Africa, but we also have 80% of people living in abject poverty. And then that's an interesting juxtaposition to explain to people that I come across, because it's the disparity of wealth is so, you know, vast.
Yeah.
You can have really rich and really, really, really poor, but you also have systems in place where governments and structures and, you know, systemic rules don't actually disperse a lot of the wealth. So, you know, whether it's corruption or whether it's whatever, there's some level that's not being trickled down to the people that actually do need it. And that's a problem. So,
yeah. Let me ask you something. Did you, in Nigeria, so like in Malawi, one of the things that was that kind of creates this systemic poverty cycle is people, like all of the most talented, you know, smartest, most academic oriented people tend to leave Malawi and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so then the people who stay in the country are not the best and brightest. And that kind of keeps the country like in poverty instead of being alleviated out of it. Is that kind of a similar thing in Nigeria?
Well, what we call it in the whole of Africa is the brain drain, right?
So brain drain,
people,
right.
People always say that, but you know, I don't know. I think people are coming around to that. Cause I mean, for example, my only country is Nigeria. So the only passport I have is Nigeria. So I always say I live in Nigeria, but I stay here longer. But there's a
gotcha.
there's a connection where I definitely do go back, and it's starting to change now because more people are starting to realize that, one, if it's just for superficial reasons, you can actually make more money back home by doing some of the same things here,
yeah,
over there, and there's just this growing idea. I don't know if it's in other African countries, but that, you know, we're the only ones that can fix our country, and so I mean it's definitely like that, but it's changing, and I've noticed that just by talking with people I went to school with. I went to high school in Nigeria as well, so I have quite a lot of alumni that we keep in touch with,
and gotcha.
We have a WhatsApp group, so we're always talking about that. So
yeah,
but that has been historically the actual challenge. Initially, if you look at, for example, my childhood, my first 9 years of my life were spent in a military dictatorship. So it wasn't just leaving,
right.
It wasn't just leaving for, you know, better, leaving for education. Some people actually left because of persecution. That part didn't happen to me, but, you know, some countries had experienced that. But that's a great question. Look at you. That's
look at me.
No, that's great. That's great. So, okay, if we stay with that, the conditions in Malawi inspired you to start this app. What exactly, what conditions exactly really just awoke something in you?
Yeah, I think it was my first few months there, and I met this really beautiful, like, she's like 7 or 8 year old young Malawian girl named Emily, and she just had like the biggest smile on her face, and she was so playful. She got along with all of her friends. Very pretty young girl, and I learned her story. I learned that about 2 years before I met her, her mom got really, really sick, and a friend of mine was trying to take. He was doing like poverty alleviation work in Emily's village, and so he saw that Emily's mom got sick, and he wanted to help her, and he needed $20 to get her to the hospital, and so he actually had the email of a friend of his in the States, and he sent that guy an email saying, "Hey, I need $20 to get Emily's mom to the hospital. She's really sick." And his friend in the States didn't quite understand exactly like how severe the situation was, and there's sometimes sometimes people think, oh, they're being, you know, it's corrupt or something like that. Like, I don't trust that. So, and or like, there's all sorts of excuses for why people don't want to give money, some legitimate, some illegitimate. And so he didn't give the $20. And 6 months later, this guy from the States comes on the trip to Malawi to go on a little tour with him and a bunch of his friends. And they're going on a tour of this village through, you know, walking on, we're talking like dirt roads, grass thatch huts, that type of, like, this is one of those remote villages. And Blessings, this guy's giving them a tour, and they come along Emily's mom, and she's sitting in the sun, and she's like baking. She's clearly in bad condition. And everyone on the tour is like, what's going on? Like, what is, like, I've never seen something like this before. And, it was explained to him that because he didn't give $20 6 months ago, Emily's mom never got to go to the hospital. And so she got really sick, and she got worse and worse and worse. And maybe she was taken to the witch doctor. I'm not exactly sure, but she had never got to go to like a nice private hospital, which is what she needed. And so, it was a rough situation, and they basically decided, all right, cancel like the plans for our trip. We're going to – our whole 2 weeks here is going to be to help Emily's mom. Like we're not going to do anything else, nothing, no safaris, nothing. We're just going to help Emily's mom. And they took her to the hospital. They got her food. They got her mattress. They left her with a bunch of stuff before getting on the plane. And they got on the plane. They went home, and a day after they left, Emily's mom actually passed away. And
oh, gosh.
Yeah, and Emily's dad at that point ran off. He was kind of not super in the picture anyways. And so I learned the story of this like really beautiful young little girl, Emily, and was just like, oh my goodness, $20 was the difference between Emily being an orphan and not being an orphan, right? Emily's like – I think she's like 10 or 11 right now. And her life, she's an orphan the rest of her life, and she's disadvantaged the rest of her life. She never has parents now, and it was a $20 situation that could have been easily fixed. And so hearing about these, that was the first story. And then you realize, oh, this isn't like a rare story. This happens all the time. This is what extreme poverty is. This is just like these stories in every village all the time, in continuation forever, unless someone steps in and does something about it. And so when I was like learning these things, I wanted to create a way to get money to these people in urgent situations faster than ever before. So that was some of the inspiration for DonorSee.
That's such an sad and incredible story, because it really paints the picture. It creates that vivid image of what exactly, you know, it is when someone says people live on less than $2 a day, and how one of your, you know, one or two of your dollars per month can actually go a long way. And you saw that, you heard this heartbreaking story, and then you turned that idea into an app, and you're very numbers oriented. What was the first step? So how did that go? Did you just start crunching numbers, and then did you meet a tech or CTO person?
I learned that story 3 years before the app existed or even a thought. I think that – or maybe like 2.5 years. So the first step was actually like I learned Emily's story, and I felt very compassionate towards her, and I still do to this day. And I wanted to know like what can I – like is there some way I can do something to help Emily? And it turned out that she was living with her grandmother, but they were homeless and they could really use a house. So I asked like, how much would it cost to build this family a house? And it turns out it was like $1,000 or something like that. So I crowdfunded $1,000 to build a house for Emily and her grandmother and her little brother Chisomo. And through that, there was like this whole ministry that was started where we this whole charity that was started where we built houses, and we've built over 100 houses for either orphans or widows in Malawi. But from there, I didn't just want to build houses. Like there's more to this problem than just houses. So I looked into other things. So, you know, in the bio of this episode, you talked about the mosquito nets, where malaria is one of it's like the number one killer in Malawi. And then we did girls' education. Malawi also has one of the worst gender parity gaps, which means that way more guys finish their education in Malawi than girls do. And there's all sorts of reasons for that. Some of them are cultural. Some of them are related to poverty. And so there's these really there's a lot of problems in Malawi, and I got my hands on a lot of them, right? Education, disease, all of it. And after that, I realized, wait a second, I'm just crowdfunding money and putting it into the people's hands, and I'm using video and picture updates, and people are really enjoying it. I'm building this community around me, right? That 100,000 girls school we built, there were thousands of people who got involved with that. And they all loved it. For once, they actually got to see exactly where their money was going. What would happen was that people would donate money, and then I would – so, it was $100,000. So the first week, we're all right, we need $7,000, and we're going to excavate the grounds. And so raise the money, excavate the grounds. All right, next, we're going to lay the foundation, and we need another $10,000 for that. All right, but now we need $15,000 to build the walls. And we did this week by week until we just had a school building. And there's 120 girls in Malawi right now who are – attending school. They're vulnerable girls. Most of them are one or two parent orphans, and they have a school building that they can attend and finish high school and then probably go into college because of this crowdfunding thing. And so I wanted to create a mechanism that allowed not just me to do it, but people all over the world. Not just Gret in Malawi fighting poverty alleviation, but maybe Jessica in Taiwan fighting sex trafficking, and just anywhere in the world where people wanted to do work instead of going through a big charity. I just wanted people to be able to just get money directly to problems. And a lot of times, the people on the ground are the ones who are best able to determine how that money should be spent in a way that's helpful and not hurting, as is often the case with these really big charities.
No, I mean, so for those listening, we're chatting here with Gret Glier. Gret is the founder of DonorC, which is a charity giving app that really, really changes how you give your money and see, where your money goes. And that to me is so interesting, because one thing that I want to peel out there is that you focused on building that house and building a lot of houses. And I remember, doing research for you, you had said that the cost of your iPad is the same as a house in other countries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that house for Emily, we built her a little bit of a bigger one, but most of them were a house for a widow or a widow who's taking care of maybe a couple kids, a couple grandkids or village kids. And most of the houses cost about $800. Either way, it's not expensive to really change these people's lives in a very meaningful way.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, and it's great that you quantify these things, because when you're saying, $20 can go this much, the cost of your iPad can really help someone's house, and you're basically making it human for people to see, wow, this is actually what it actually takes for people in other countries, and I'm taking that for granted, and I love the way you quantify that. But something else that we've become is Facebook friends, and I remember scrolling through my Facebook feed one day, and you had this epic rant against the American Red Cross. I don't even remember what exactly it was about, but you were sort of calling them out on something. So how have donation campaigns been run so inefficiently? What is the current condition for all these campaigns, and why they're so inefficient? And what is your frustration with them?
The frustration is being in Malawi. I lived there for 3 years. I saw what charities said they were doing to donors in the States. They would tell donors, hey, we're doing this amazing stuff. We're helping 10,000 people across the villages in Malawi. But then on the ground, they weren't doing anything, or they were hurting those people. So the classic example that gets brought up over and over again is Tom's Shoes, right? Tom's Shoes they have the one for one model. You buy shoes, which I did when I was in college. I was all into the hipster trendy lifestyle, and I bought Tom's Shoes. I was proud that my shoes were turning into shoes for people overseas.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, every time they distribute these shoes to a community, in general, they're putting the local shoemaker out of business. It's not actually – and that's like one thing. The other thing is they're often – well, I'll put it this way. When I was in Malawi, I knew of a warehouse that was full of thousands and thousands of Tom's shoes. So I don't know that they're even actually being distributed the way that they're marketing it. And there's all sorts of problems with that particular model. And then I think like Red Cross is like – they're like the figurehead, right? They have a $3 billion annual revenue. They collect tons and tons of – and massive amounts of donations. And you can just – I mean Google – I don't even – where do you start? Like which scam do you want to go into? Just like – just Google Red Cross scandal and you'll have endless and endless amounts of results, one a week if you want it. And the basic problem with charities, the status quo of charities right now is that the bigger a charity gets, right? When charities start, they're very passionate, they're very like startup oriented, and that's great. That's like a very it's inspiring to see that. But as they get bigger and as they establish more quote unquote credibility, the charities develop different corners of their organization that are harder to manage. They become inefficient, or they become fraudulent or wasteful, and it's really difficult to do that. And anyone who has worked in a nonprofit office will quickly verify that that's the case. So the thing that I like about DonorSeed, and we talked about how this was the same thing with YouTube, or people call DonorSeed the Uber for charity. So like Uber, the more drivers for Uber that you have enter a city, the better the app becomes, because you've got more competition for rides, you've got more people looking for the 5-star review driver, and you get picked up a little bit faster than usual. DonorSeed has that same effect. The more people we have posting projects, the more competition that creates for donor dollars, and the more compelling people make their projects, the more people add more video to their projects and create more transparency to their projects. So DonorSeed is like the opposite of every big charity that's ever existed. The bigger that DonorSeed gets, the better, more efficient, more lean it gets, as opposed to the opposite, which is what's been going on for the last several decades.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Oh my goodness. Wow. But so there's so many things you said there, and I thank you for breaking down how that you know relates to Uber, because that just paints the picture. And you're very good at doing this, painting the picture and making things relatable to you know to layman like me.
But, Thank you.
But something you said there that I didn't know that about Tom's Shoe. I mean, I had heard and stuff like that, but I didn't know exactly what was wrong with the model. And you said there's something wrong with that model where. I think what's the glasses company? Warby Parker does something similar.
People have started copying their model. It's very profitable.
So explain that to me and people listening who might not understand, who may actually think that, oh, okay, so that goes there. So why is that a bad model?
All right, so there's a few things. One, the goal when you're helping people overseas is you want to do things that will lift them out of poverty, right? So most people understand if you give an able-bodied man $100 a day, he's not going to get lifted out of poverty. He's going to create a dependency on your gift of $100 a day. Mm-hmm. And he's not going to go out and get a job. He's not going to go out and produce and be industrious. Instead, he's just going to learn to come and collect his $100 every day. And that an able-bodied man is a little bit different than like an orphan or a widow who's severely disadvantaged, right? Those people do need special attention, special help, because their situation is so drastic. So in general, what you want to do is, it's the whole like teach a man to fish instead of give a man the fish. The problem with Tom's Shoes is you have these guys who are growing their shoes business in every village. They're growing their, maybe they're a tailor, or they make shoes for the village, or they're a cook for the village. Whenever Tom's Shoes comes in and just blankets a village with shoes, the guy who's diligently making shoes and who is providing food for his family based on the shoes that he's making has been immediately put out of business by this very profitable corporation in the United States that's just giving shoes away. So that's one problem. The other problem is, a lot of times people don't need shoes or don't even want shoes or already have shoes. Like, shoes are often like not the main concern, right? When you're throwing up every time you have dirty water, maybe people would prefer to have a well put into their village, or maybe people would prefer to have mosquito nets put over their bed so that they're not getting malaria every single season, and so that their kids under 5 years old aren't dying, instead of just giving them shoes, which is, it's a nice gesture, but at the same time, it's not exactly what the people need. Mm. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of reasons. So the general idea, and there's a million things you can read about this: Poverty Cure, Poverty Inc., When Helping Hurts. These resources talk a lot about the importance of having people helping people in a way to where they help themselves instead of giving them handouts where they create dependency.
Mm. No, this is so educational for me. There are people that do create that. I forget what it's called. Is it micro lending or?
Yeah, micro lending is a very good way to help, for sure.
Yeah, and I'm even afraid to ask this question now. What about charity water? So you hear a lot about those, like that charity that builds wells.
Yeah. Sure. I'm good friends. I wouldn't say good friend, but I've met Scott Harrison several times, the CEO of Charity Water. He's a big inspiration to me, and he's someone who I remember like seeing a talk of his when I was in college and being like, okay, that right there, I want to go like spend a year overseas and do like the Scott Harrison thing. And then okay. So like he actually is very inspirational to me. And I respect them a lot. And he's like the leader of the change, like let's fix charity charge. And so Charity Water was started 10 years ago, and they do a good job of getting money directly to the right offices. And yeah, I don't have a whole lot of negative things to say about them. For an organization, they really have started to change charity, and I am doing a similar thing with DonorSee, but in a different way.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because the reason I was like, oh gosh, I've heard Scott Harrison talk. He seems like he's the real deal. I was like, oh, it'd be great to say something bad.
He's a cool guy. No, I like him a lot.
Okay. So he inspired you to travel. But you've described traveling to a third world country, as Malawi, as taking a leap of faith.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that?
I think it's scary to do something like that, where you're going to a country where there's a lot of, I'm sure you get questions all the time whenever you're in the States, people asking you ridiculous stuff about what your life is like in Nigeria. And so you hear these ideas, and I even remember thinking, like when I was first going to Malawi, I remember thinking like, oh wow, I was like getting ready to board the plane. I was like, this is crazy. I just took my last hot shower this morning. It was just a dumb thing to think. Like, they obviously have hot water in everywhere all over sub-Saharan Africa. You just have to like live in the city or whatever, but like they have grocery stores, hospitals, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And anyways, so yeah, I think that leap of faith element has to do with, it's like the unknown. It's like you're jumping into this new territory and you don't know how you're going to land or where you're going to land or what the environment's going to be like when you land. And it's scary. But then once you do it that first time, it's only a leap of faith the first time. After that, it's just normal. You just do it. It's fine. It's easy. So I could go – I feel like I could just like land in any country. Like I was looking at buying tickets to either Iraq or Syria a couple months ago because I just want to like go over there and like see like use DonorSee to help the people over there. So yeah, I think that leap of faith comes from it's like the unknown. It's like scary the first time you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right about the questions that I get. And I think it's just a matter of exposure. I once again, my favorite thing about you is your level of self-awareness, because I think the ability to ask the questions, even though they might seem stupid, is still a good question, even though, you know, the person being asked the question might be offended. I remember when I first came here
And I did get asked those questions, and I thought I was being punked. And I thought people were asking yeah. me legitimately if I slept in huts or if I rode on lions and stuff like that. And after a few times when I was a little offended, I just started to see it as an education opportunity. And that's part of why this podcast is here, by the way. It's to educate people on the global and digital world that we live in. I find that a lot of people don't actually know the world mm-hmm. we live in, like whether it's the amount of people on the other side of the world who are living in these conditions, or even people who are living in great conditions, what actually goes on, and why the media is not portraying the right stories. And as an African myself, one of the things that I constantly fight is to change the narrative and for us to question that. So, mm-hmm. So love the fact that you brought that up, and really, even if it's better to ask a stupid question now than to allow your whole world to be informed by that worldview, because then you know you perpetuate certain stereotypes, which could be dangerous as you start to reproduce and get more generations down the line.
I gotta say, you've got to be one of the most like kindred spirits of any of the like podcasts or interviews I've done, just because what you're saying, like the number of people on the other side of the world, the conditions that other people in different parts of the world live, these are things that are such stark realities in my mind and your mind, but like really hard to communicate to someone who just like hasn't, if you just like haven't seen it face to face, if you like haven't traveled there, it's just like, it's really difficult to have people understand or explain it to them.
No, thank you. But that's why, I mean, when our mutual friend introduced us, I guess he felt like you'd be a good fit, but what you're doing is actually helping that. I think a lot of people don't know what they don't know, and you being able to show those videos and show that it's an interesting way to really create that empathy that people might not have. And we live in very interesting times now where a lot of people are now starting to come to terms with the fact that there are really disenfranchised people, whether it doesn't matter what side of the politics you are, and everybody knows where I stand, but still, but it doesn't even matter what side of the politics you are. You do have factions where people are now becoming empowered to fight for different voices or different rights, because this, for some people, this is the first time that they've experienced that. Now, mm-hmm. if you're going to empathize that and try and connect that to what goes on in the rest of the world, you can now see, well, some people didn't even get to see what your before was. They just mm-hmm. live you after every day. And that's been a reality for them. So I think, you know, having you on the show and talking to people and just changing my mindset a little bit about, you know, using stupid questions as an education opportunity. Actually, it's not – stupid questions too harsh. Using questions as an education opportunity.
Right, yeah.
I think
– just ignorant.
Maybe. Yeah, ignorance. I think that does help. And ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Greg Glier, who is 26 or 27? 26. So 26, so we're a year apart, and he's lived in Malawi where he crowdfunded for a girls' school there, and crowdfunded $100,000. And we're talking about his revolutionary new app. You are going to close soon, but a thing that I always champion for, in you know this, you know, the whole reason, like I said, for this is to help influence the next set of global leaders. And one of the ways to do that is to educate and change the current narrative around media. There's this idea of gender, the gender gap. I always describe myself as a feminist, but I've created certain videos around these gender gaps, and there are people that disagree, and when they disagree, they are very vocal. I think mm-hmm. they basically have called me subservient and someone that's basically trying to get laid. I'm not even kidding. These are comments I've had on YouTube, and yeah. But what strikes me as interesting about some of their responses is that they legitimately don't agree that women are at a disadvantaged position. You've seen mm-hmm. this. I've seen this. But when you were in Malawi, you raised a great point about how women don't necessarily get the same opportunities as men do sometimes, and that does affect people as you grow older. Can you just talk about that a little bit so that you can shed some light on why we really need to focus on the patriarchal world that we have right now?
Yeah, so that is a multifaceted, very interesting question and a very interesting point. And I think I guess I would want to make a distinction between like the rights that women have in the States and then the rights that women have globally? Because I think,
yeah,
from what I can tell, like the rights that women have in the States are much. I don't know if they're equal with men, and I might even say that they're probably not. I haven't done like enough research to speak to that, but I can say that they're far better than rights of either like women in the Middle East who have to wear veils over their faces, or women in Africa who are. There's just like a cultural expectation that like it's okay for your husband to beat you, or it's like you just have to do everything. Like you have to cook, clean, take care of the kids, maybe farm. Like you are in charge of everything. And meanwhile, like the husband, like Emily's mom and dad are a perfect example from earlier. Emily's mom did everything. The husband was just like an abusive alcoholic jerk. And as soon as Emily's mom died, which by the way, I didn't mention this earlier. It's like a little bit too sad to mention, but the reason that she was sick was because Emily's dad was beating her. So like these are very real issues, and fighting for like the reason I picked a girls' school to crowdfund in Malawi is because that has to be like there's a few things that are just like these are unquestionably the best ways to fight poverty. Girls' education is at the top of that list. It's one of those things that you provide females with education, you give them the same rights, you empower them, and it really changes the dynamic and the direction of that community.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And when we're, you know, Greg and I are talking about this, it's not, you know, when we're champions for gender equality, it's a global issue, right? It's more of we need to do better as a world and people who have certain amount of privileges to fix what goes on, whether it's trafficking in Southeast Asia or even in other countries. Some trafficking goes on here, actually, believe it or not, or just raising kids and girls to believe in themselves and see themselves as much more than subservient or subordinates to whatever males they get there. And some of the conditions, these are certainly not the conditions in all of African cities and all that, you know, because some cities are, a lot of cities are very, very different. But if you go into some rural areas, it is very common for women to be hit on. It's very common for women to be raped at a preteen age. And it's very common for a lot of women to be conditioned to think that that's okay.
Now, yeah.
You know, there's this video that's been going around with Ashton Kutcher, who's also, I guess he's doing a similar thing, he's creating an app, but it's focused on trafficking. And this is very graphic, so if you've got kids, please pause for like a few minutes. But he talked about how he was watching a video of someone who's as old as his daughter, and his daughters are at 3, and he was forced to watch this disgusting man do something to her that no one should do. And they were the last line of defense because they were trying to find like some home for her. And these are just the realities that we, a lot of people in the Western world don't get to see on a regular basis. So when charities that are supposed to be fixing these issues take the money and do it for something else, I really, 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 really get mad. I mean, that bothers me to the highest extent. And I've grown up in cultures where that are legitimately corrupt. So I see the corruption on a daily basis. So when I start to see that from charities as well, it bothers me to no end. And it's one of the few ways to get me really angry, because you're not solving a problem. So
right.
I really, really appreciate the app that you're creating, because not only is it showing that transparency, but it's creating images in people's faces where they are able to tap into that empathetic muscle that I feel like we all have, and I hope some presidents have. So thank you. I guess that's why I was saying all that. That was why I went into that monologue, because I think it's really important to understand that being a feminist is not. Yes, yeah, some people say that it's a cool tag, makes you, you know, cool with your female friends, all that, but it's a human issue, human rights issue. So, yeah,
I agree. Like I think, especially from the like global perspective, man, talk about like a minority group. Talk about like a severely disadvantaged group. Like I think about Emily quite a bit, and I'm just grateful that you're like willing to be outspoken about it and willing to accept criticism about it, because it's. There's so much like tension around that issue, and especially once you like bring it out to the global perspective and you help people understand. Like I just posted a video on DonorSee yesterday morning of a mom who every morning there's this girl who was born 5 months premature, and she's 13 now and she's going to school, but her body's kind of contorted. And so every morning this mom picks this girl up on her shoulders, this 13-year-old girl, and walks her to school every single day. And so we were using DonorSee to fundraise a wheelchair so that she doesn't have to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's like these incredible, incredible people who are basically voiceless. And I'm glad that you're there speaking out for them.
I don't know. It's thank you so much, and it's very, very hard for me to make through these interviews because I always get very emotional. If I get a few YouTube comments, you know, yell at me and call me all sorts of names or death threats, that I don't know that's as serious as what goes on in any parts of the world. So
right,
you know, it's. I think being a voice for the voices is something we should all do, and what you're doing is attacking global problems with local solutions, and you're empowering the locals there to be more sustainable. So it's great, and so I love what you do. And where can people find out more about you though, if they were to look and be interested in that?
Yeah, sure. So Greg Glier @GregGlier at Twitter, GretGlyer. You can also if you want follow me on DonorSee. So just go to Donor. And type in my name, Greg Glier, and you can follow me on there. And what that means is that anytime I post a new project, like that girl who needed a wheelchair, you'll get like a little notification on your phone saying, hey, Greg just posted a project, and you can give to it, or you can just like follow along and see like the whole premise of DonorSee is whenever you give money, we'll show you like for the girl with the wheelchair, whenever she gets her wheelchair, we'll like video it and send it back to the donors. So oh, wow. For every project on DonorSee, you get to see exactly where your money's going. So if another example is like if there's a girl who needs a hearing aid in Nigeria and you donate the $150 to get her a hearing aid, you'll get a video of her hearing for the first time. It's like that type of dynamic. So a really great app, very fun, very addictive, and you should follow me on it.
All right, there you go. Go. It's Greg Glier and DonorSee.com, right? DonorSee.com, or it's an app mm-hmm. you can download. Is it Android friendly and Mac, Apple friendly? I'm an Apple person, but you know.
Apple, yeah, I am too. But it's on Android, it's on Apple, and it's on just DonorSee.com. So right. Anywhere.
Okay, we'll definitely put that in insurance and let people know. But before we go, we've got to ask you the mission statement question here, which is the reason why everything is done. I believe in the idea of using your difference to make a difference. So my mission statement is use your difference to make a difference, taking the idea of inclusion and tying the mission element to that. So how do you use your difference to make a difference, Greg?
Yeah, I think DonorSee is a result of the various experiences and talents that I have. So like over the last several years, I gotten involved in poverty alleviation work. I built a platform around the idea of like crowdfunding and getting money directly to people. And I also like, as you know, like I make a lot of videos, and I am very passionate about like not just video for the sake of communication, but also video for the sake of like art and expressing things. And like one of my dreams one day is to create a video that helps people really empathize with the other half of the world, the one that you and I were talking about, that's really hard to express. I would love to create like help fund like a movie or something like that expresses that. So yeah, my whole all the various mix of my talents has created this app that I'm really passionate about.
Well, there you have it. Greg using his difference to make a difference by combining his talents to tell the stories that aren't being told and being a voice for the voiceless. I want to thank you. Thank you for coming to the show. This is a great way to wake up in the morning.
Yeah, for sure.
But thank you. Thank you for coming to the show. I really, really admire what you're doing, and I can't wait to get this episode out there.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
A pleasure is mine. Till next week, ladies and gentlemen, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.